will not be well received. And I did talk to Soto a couple days ago. He's with you. He says it's going to be 50,000 against one. I mean, he said it matter-of-factly. He understands it. He's been on four different teams now. That's unusual for a great player. He's been booed plenty of times. He expects the worst in terms of the booing, and he gets it. And he says he just deal with it. He's going to do my stuff, is that what he said? So, you know, he's prepared, and I think we're all prepared for quite an avalanche of boos at Yankee Stadium Friday.
Yeah, I'm sure a couple of Met fans will sneak in. It won't be exactly 50,000 to one, but it will feel like 50,000 to one for sure. It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Friday, May 16th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Happy Friday. Weekend is upon us. Hope everybody's doing well. You might say, well, Mike, wow, what's going on? Why a couple of days early? Well, big, big, big sports weekend tonight, and I'll start there. The reason I come to you is that you have the big Subway Series starting. I wanted to set it all up. Obviously, there'll be a Sunday night baseball game, which may interfere with our regular Sunday programming. And I wanted to give you an update. I know I owe you the top pitching prospects, part two. And I said, why not come to everybody on a Friday, kind of set the weekend up, set the table for what should be a really fun sports weekend. I know the weather here, you know, summer really hasn't arrived, at least out here in New York. The spring, pollen, disgusting rain. I was in the building on Tuesday night, so that was fun. And you know, got a chance to go to Citi Field, but the weather is still iffy. It's still dicey there. So hopefully better days to come. But let's just start where we're at. So I had said this, I had talked about this over at the newsletter. I think I mentioned it probably on the show last week, but tonight between the Subway Series at Yankee Stadium, you know, maybe not the old historical ballpark, but a historical ballpark and a ballpark that I think you'll start to see in the sense of the Subway Series come back to life, and that'll be something I'll chat about real quick. This won't be a long show. This will be kind of like more of a State of the Union. And then you've got Game 6, Knicks-Celtics, two historic franchises. The Knicks trying to slay a champion. Probably their biggest, not probably, is their biggest game at Madison Square Garden in 25 years. It just, part of it tells me, wow, look how quickly time goes by. Yes, that's an indictment on the Knicks, and it's an indictment on the Knicks organization. But at the same year that the Knicks lost to the Pacers in the conference finals, the last really big game at Madison Square Garden, the Mets and Yankees were on their way to the Subway Series, and the Yankees were on their way to winning their fourth title in 5 years. So it seems like yesterday it's not. So tonight, this is going to be one of those challenging nights. You know, I'm a big Knicks fan. I'm sure many in the audience are as well. This is, you know, basketball is one of those things. You can't just flick back and forth. You've got the Subway Series, and that is always a fun thing. So you don't get many of these. If the Knicks continue to do what they do in the coming, you know, a few years, you know, hopefully the Rangers get back into it. Obviously the Mets and the Yankees are going to, I think, continue to be pretty good in the near future at the very least. You might start to have some of that old 90s vibe to our sports town here. And then, geez, if the football teams could get going in the fall and in the winter, you might have something there. It'd be like it'll be like Nirvana, sports Nirvana here in New York. No, but enjoy the night here. Like, you don't always, as a sports fan, get these kind of nights. You don't have the intensity, the high level of stakes. I know it's just the Subway Series in May, but it's always a good, and that's how I always used to look at it back in the 90s, was that it was the first test for the Mets to get in front of a big crowd, play in front of a big game, even though it was just a regular season game in the standings. It was a big game, and it trained you to kind of get you ready for what would be much bigger stakes in October. Now, this group played many big games, maybe not at Yankee Stadium, maybe not with the hype of the Subway Series, and maybe it was in a somewhat empty Atlanta ballpark in early October, and then obviously the raucous crowd in Milwaukee and the raucous crowd in Philadelphia, and obviously we know what happened in L.A., and that's a tough place to play. So this team's played in tough environments, but you always could start to train yourself. You know, when you the season ends and you shut down and you get into a new season, you got to start getting the juices going again. So this is like that first, I think, really raucous big series that let's see where the Mets are at. I mean, we're almost at that point where we want to anoint them. You know, the getting to know you phase is kind of coming to an end. We're not going to talk about that today. But this, and then obviously next weekend against the Dodgers, are two very big series. The Mets passed the test against the Cubs last weekend, shutting down one of the best offense at that point in baseball. If you want to argue, it's temporary. One of the best offenses in baseball. The Yankees, another great offense that they'll be up against. They won't have Senga and Holmes in this series. And then next week, the Dodgers, you know, the 96 Bulls of the sport coming to town. So this is going to be a fun baseball weekend. If the Knicks could pull it off and beat the Celtics, you'll have some conference finals basketball coming up. The next few weeks, and I know baseball will dominate the summer after the NBA is over, and then it's going to be that period where it's just baseball before NFL training camp. And baseball kind of gets into its lull, especially as you get towards the All-Star break, before you know the games get much bigger in mid-August into September. So this is that period where you've gotten from the early season of wading into the baseball river, and then now it's like, okay, now it's like you're on a cardio. You're starting to get that heart rate going. So this weekend will be where the heart rate will get going. Really, I think the other theme of this weekend is, and I've talked about it a lot, this used to be a huge event. I mean, I've had Dave Malicki on this show. We all know that first Subway Series, what he did. I mean, there's so many, forget the regular like World Series, so many great memories. Matt Franco's walk-off, one of my best baseball fan moments over there. I was at the day-night doubleheader. I was at the Shea part when Clemens beamed Piazza. You know, you want to even go down the memory bank here. I mean, think about Mo Vaughn's home run. I think that might have been on Father's Day in 2002. People don't remember. That's a fun Subway Series game. David Wright's walk-off off Mariano Rivera in 06. Carlos Delgado, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago after Brandon Nimmo had his big game, had the 9 RBI day at Yankee Stadium. What about, like, you know, things that'll get forgotten? Ahmed Rosario hitting a walk-off home run, the Mets with a home team at Yankee Stadium during COVID. And Starling Marte with a walk-off a couple of years ago. And then last year, I thought, you know, the Mets played only 2-2, which I always think is better. 1 week, 4 games, 2-2. Let's get it out of the way. They went back to the 3-3, couple of more gates. I'm sure both Hal Steinbrenner and Steve Cohen appreciate that. And I think a lot of that has to do with scheduling. So I don't know how that's going to work all the time. I don't know if they're always just going to go 3-3. I think it partially has to do with how the schedule worked out. But, you have so many, like last year, there was so many fun moments as well. And if you remember, during the second leg of the Subway Series, when they were at Citi Field, I think that was late June, maybe, I talked about that being an opportunity for the Mets to sell Soto. Maybe it was July. I can't remember. I think it was late June, early July. It was something like that. But it was about selling Soto, and the Mets obviously, and the crowd did their part, and the Mets won a couple of games, and even Soto didn't look good in the outfield, I remember that. So the Mets have sold Soto. We've talked about that a lot. But I think now the next part of this Soto story that's going to play out over well over a decade is the Subway Series has not been the same since probably at some point when Terry Collins took over, I felt like the fact that the Mets were clearly going into purgatory and weren't necessarily looking to compete at that the same level that Omar Minaya tried to keep them competing. And they certainly weren't, it wasn't like the early days when Bobby Valentine and Joe Torre and the Yankees were winning championships and the Mets were trying to get back to relevancy and had a tough, gritty veteran team. So I felt the series started to die. And then the Mets got a little bit better in 2015. And the Yankees kind of went into their own little purgatory. And then the Mets had their issues, 17, 18, 19. And there was some fun moments. And obviously, the Subway Series was always a time when the juices get going. But when you would see lack of interest or empty seats earlier in the game, or maybe not even quite sellouts, it seemed like. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the last 3, 4, 5 years, there's been some big games, the Lindor 3-home run game, and things like that. And I thought last year the juices started to come back, but there really hasn't been that old school 90s, dislike between the two sides and the intensity. And I feel like Soto's going to bring that back. This weekend's all about Soto. I think Carlos Mendoza giving him a day off on Wednesday partly was because of this weekend. Gave him a couple of days. I think Mendoza knew that this was going to be a cauldron for him. He knew that the media, which has already started, John Heyman talked to him, was going to make it about him. The fans were going to be intensely on him. And in a lot of ways, I think Mendoza is very smart to understand that this weekend's big for Soto because if he has a bad weekend, you'll have one fan base celebrating, you'll have a media pile on, and then the question will be, is this where the fans, the Mets fans, sour on Soto early? They've actually supported him. I've been impressed with how patient they've been. The media has really tried to make him a pariah early, make him a big negative story, and the Met fan hasn't taken the bait. Now, Soto has been underwhelming. And this is where I really think the context has to be put in place. An underwhelming Soto coming into the action tonight has a 142 OPS plus, 845 OPS, and 8 home runs, 20 RBIs. Yes, if you looked at this in context of his career, this is on the lower end of his production. But if this is your floor, and it's only 43 games, you still have about 120 games to go. It mirrors, ironically, it mirrors the same period of time when he came over midseason from D.C. to San Diego and how he wasn't himself either. And then miraculously the next year he popped back up to being Juan Soto. Maybe not as good as the Juan Soto we saw in the Bronx, but pretty much the same statistically if you look at it. So this is not the first time with change and that Soto's gone through an adjustment period. And he is a human being, and now he's going through the adjustment period as the highest paid player in baseball. And a huge target on his back because he left an iconic franchise that the media loves, that nobody ever leaves. He did something that nobody else has done from a payroll standpoint, from a salary standpoint, from a standpoint of leaving the Yankees, especially to go across town to the Mets. Maybe the only thing that'd be worse would be going to Boston, which they were in play. If he had gone to Toronto, if he had gone to LA, I don't think it would have been the same anger towards Soto. They'd be discontent, but he'd be out in the West Coast and, see you later type of deal. So this weekend's going to be about Soto, and I think it's the first opportunity for him to really cement himself as a Met. I'm not saying he has to have a walk-off home run. I'm not saying he has to go 7-for-10 over the first two nights. But he needs to be impactful. He needs to have good at-bats. He needs to have big hits, even if it's a double in the first inning. And I'll tell you, if he does come up late and close with a couple of runners on in the 7th or 8th inning and doesn't get a hit, even if he has a big weekend, that will start the clutch and how impactful Soto commentary is. So you really want to put a cherry on top, Juan? When that opportunity arises, if it arises, if they actually pitch to you, then, that would be a good way to introduce yourself. Almost like now you're a Met. And think about Lindor. Lindor had that same first year challenges. And he wasn't at a 142 OPS plus floor when he started out. And it really took Lindor a full year to kind of get himself situated here after the big contract. But he had that big 3-home run game. I know the Mets were fading in September, but it was a September 11th game. It was a Sunday night game. Citi Field was loud. And, you know, the Yankees were obviously playing for a lot. The Mets were, quote unquote, kind of in the race. But they, you know, deep down, you knew they were fading. They were starting to fall apart. And Lindor gave you one more summer night, that 3-home run game and a big comeback win on that Sunday night just 4 years ago. And that kind of propelled him, I think, in some ways. And that was in the midst of, you know, thumbs down and all the other garbage and nonsense that went on during Cohen's first full year of ownership. So Soto has a perfect opportunity. But more importantly, I think the fact that Soto changed sides might waken these fan bases to the rivalry within each other. It's always been there, but I feel like the Mets fans have been focusing on the Mets and all the things that have gone on since Cohen took over. The Yankees fans are going through this transition where they were, a whole group of 90s fans were led to believe that pinstripes were magical. And no matter what the Yankees did, it always turned out right. And they somehow were always on another playing field. And a lot of that had to do with the economic difference. But they're always on another playing field. They always get the free agent they want. No matter who comes and puts pinstripes on, they'll get what I used to call the Yankees bump. I always think of Glenn Allen Hill throwing a Yankees uniform on, and all of a sudden, Aaron Small, all of a sudden they're stars. It used to drive me crazy. Jose Vizcaino. And it was true. There was something about coming into that environment. That's where energy and environment and those intangibles that you can't measure are a thing. But over the years, especially since they lost to Houston and then COVID hit and things started for the Yankees as it got harder and harder in this sport with additional wild cards and teams becoming much smarter, doing more with less, with every team kind of implementing some of the information and analytics that closes the gap. The money is important, but it doesn't guarantee you everything. And the Yankees have kind of normalized themselves where, like any other franchise, you're going to go through periods. And the Yankees have not had a losing season. I mean, a bad season for them in the last, you know, since the early 90s has been, what, an 82-83 win season, 84-win season? I mean, those, for some, Pirates right now would take that. A lot of teams would take that. And for a span of time, you know, the Mets were winning 87 games and you know, 77 to 81 games during the purgatory years of Collins. And not that those were good, but it wasn't like, you know, that was your floor. The floor has been much lower than that. So the Yankees are still at a level that, you know, the Mets haven't gotten to. But I think things have normalized. I think the Yankee fan has learned a little bit that, you know, you're just like everybody else. Your organization goes through the same things everybody else does. And winning is hard. And throwing on pinstripes and hoping and praying that, or pretending in some way, especially with the Yankee portion of the media, that it's the 90s. Anytime something comes up that's even remotely comparable, like, you know, Anthony Volpe comes up, he's a local kid. Well, that's the next Derek Jeter. Like Didi Gregorius was the next Derek Jeter. Well, how about Didi Gregorius is Didi Gregorius? How about Volpe is Volpe? And Derek Jeter is going to be Derek Jeter. Like, it's such a high bar. The 90s were special. They were special even, I think, you know, I have fond memories as a Mets fan on the Mets side. But now it's over. And it's in the history books. Just like the 61 Yankees are in the history book, and the Yankees from the 40s and 50s, the DiMaggio Yankees were in the history book, and the Ruth Yankees and the Gehrig Yankees in the history book. That has nothing, has no bearing on today. And I think the Yankee fans are learning that. And I think they're seeing that in the new world of Cohen, that the Mets are going to be more functional. The Mets are building their own brand. And I was at the ballpark on Tuesday, and it looks like the casino is going to be approved, whether you like it or not. And I think they're going to try to build some kind of fun outdoor green space there before the game. And if there's a casino, and maybe with some of the development across the street where the chop shops used to be, maybe it'll be a fun place to go after a ball game instead of running to your car and running out of there, because what else are you going to do once the ball game is over there in what really is Corona, even though they say it's Flushing. So I think the Mets are building their own fun brand. And it may be have some components of the Yankees. And I'll tell you what, I even wrote about this at Beyond the Mic. I had a little 94, 93, 95 Yankee vibe at Citi Field on Tuesday night. That like early like time when the Yankees were starting to make their run and become a different franchise. Maybe I'm overreacting to it, but I felt a little bit that. And I was at a night on Tuesday, a rainy night, where it wasn't a full ballpark. It wasn't like the weekend where I've talked to people who were there against the Cubs last weekend, and they said it was an incredible experience. Talked to multiple people that were there. So here you have this scenario set up, and now you've got the igniter, which is Soto changing sides. And he could really bring back that spice and vinegar to the series. That really, that's what made this fun. What made it fun is how, you know, when a Joe Torre says how he hated it because it was so much stress because he didn't want to hear from Steinbrenner, even though it was just a regular season game, that was the level of intensity. You know, you as a Mets fan were miserable if you lost to the Yankees. It ruined your entire, like, it was worse than any other loss. It was worse than losing to the Braves. I mean, no, that's crazy. Now, for the players, is it the same? I don't know if it was quite the same. I think they felt it. Obviously, the culmination of that was when, you know, the Clemens Piazza thing. That's when the real hatred and the phoniness of the 90s Yankees came out. But, you know, I think that to a certain degree, I I'd have to talk to a player. But I think the next, it provided you a little practice for what is the deep end of the pool of October. And that's never a bad thing. Now, is it stressful in May? Is it stressful on a weekend where, as a sports fan, you're dealing with big games at the Garden and now all these Subway Series games? Yeah, of course. You just want to go out and kind of like, you know, ease into the season. Well, now you've eased into the season. Now the juices get flowing. And then it drops back a little bit because, you know, you have a little bit of you know, go to Boston, but it's still, that's another, you know, intense situation. Another good team, and then the Dodgers. So you got about a week of games here where the Mets start out here. But I think Soto is going to be sort of like maybe a turning point where we get a lot of that back. Nothing is ever gone forever. Nothing always lasts forever. Nothing is gone forever. Things are ebbs and flows. And maybe we're heading into a new era of the Subway Series. And if the Yankees, and I don't see why they won't continue to be at the top of the American League, because that is not a strong league. I don't think the Yankees are a great team. I think they're a good team. But the way that league is set up, I don't think that you know, you're going to see the Yankees fade away. So this could be something that is another 5 or 6 year run, like the late 90s into the turn of the century, that we get this kind of juice. Will the Soto stuff fade? Yes, it will eventually fade, but he's the igniter now. Now, the thing about Soto is that in a lot of ways, he's kind of going through like an A-Rod type thing. And I think this weekend, I mean, Soto in a lot of ways is mirroring the Mets offense. The Mets have a pretty good offense. I think the offense could be better. And I know they didn't score a heck of a lot against the Pirates. That last game was annoying, I know that. But you're facing Paul Skeens and Mitch Keller. These are good arms. And Keller was, I was behind home plate on Tuesday. He was good on Tuesday. The movement on his pitches was every bit as good as Senga. And, you know, I think that Soto has a lot more to give. I know he's been underwhelming. I know the Mets have started out 2.5 game lead, 12 games over 500. I think that there's a lot to like here, but I know that everybody in the back of their head is saying, hey, I just wish there'd be a little bit more. I'm not feeling great because they're not scoring all the time. And now is the time where this foundation that is, I mean, think about it. Mets fans complain about being 2.5 games up on the Phillies, 12 games over, and a player, an elite all-time player that has a 142 OPS plus. They're complaining about all that. Things have changed. So this is a chance for the Mets and Soto on the offensive side to really start to, you know, take it down to the level that you think that they need to be. Hitting more with runners on in scoring position. Hitting with two outs. I mean, when you're playing close games like the Mets are, and, you know, they haven't hit their stride offensively where they're a bully offense, and maybe they won't, because I think the bottom of the lineup at times might have some soft spots. You know, especially with Taylor in there, and at times when you know, you got Marte at the DH, and even though, you know, Torrens and Alvarez aren't bad catchers, they haven't yet consistently hit. You know, Beatty comes around, that could be a little bit different. But I think this is a chance for the Mets to take it to the next level here. And Soto to take it to the next level here. And I think I'll tell you what. You know, A-Rod went 5 years with the no clutch moniker until the 2009 World Series. Things start to become a label here. And I think that there's a lot of members of the media that want to label Soto. The Yankee fans certainly want to label Soto overrated and not clutch. And I don't want the Mets fans to jump on that because that'll add another layer of complexity to his transition to him. You know, this is a lifetime marriage. Soto's married to the Mets. Met fans are married to Soto. I don't want to hear about sources said he's unhappy. It don't matter. Okay, if you want to be like a teenage girl or a teenage boy that's upset about their significant other breaking up with them, and you want to go on Facebook and look and go, ha 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 ha, look, they had a bad Saturday night, like that, you want to do that, that's fine. Like, you got to get over it. You know, you got to get over it. Like, to me, and the media fuels a lot of that. And this whole idea that they want to add to that for clicks, like, that's just childish. Like, nobody knows what's going on the guy's head. And I don't want to hear sources say this. He doesn't look happy. You know what? There are times you're going to see me out in public where you might see me. I don't look happy. That might not mean anything more, but I'm thinking. Maybe that's, to me, Soto's persona is flat. Like, he's just doing his job. He's intense. He's not a guy, I don't think he likes doing the camera stuff. I know the fans are like, why does he like taking the pictures after the home run? I don't think that's him. I think like sometimes people just want to go out and play baseball. And to be at a level and be great like Soto is, it takes a lot. Probably takes a lot of intensity from both the physical and mental perspective. He's not Pete Alonso. He's not Brandon Nimmo personality-wise. He's not Francisco Lindor. I think that also stands out. Those are different types of personalities. That doesn't mean he's bad. Doesn't mean that they're bad. When Lindor goes bad, I remember people complaining that he's always kind of like, oh, he doesn't take it seriously. He's smiling and laughing. But appreciate, and I think that's the big thing here, and I want to leave you with this. I don't want to go on too long. I'm just setting the table here. Appreciate the fact that two New York teams have perhaps, when it's all said and done, and there's a lot of baseball, both of them, two of the all-time best offensive players in the history of baseball. You are seeing, in the Bronx, a modern-day Mantle, and in Flushing, a modern-day Ted Williams. And they were playing together last year. That tells you, I mean, if Soto had re-signed with the Yankees, that might have gone down. And I'm not a Yankee lover. You guys know that. The best 1-2 punch in the history of the game. Offensively, 1-2 punch. I mean, they were so good together, and they're so good individually, that they changed lineups by themselves and incredibly changed. I mean, even though the Yankees had, and when the Mets played the Yankees in the Subway Series, they had nothing around those two guys at times. Nothing. And they still were, you know, all you had to do is get a couple runs on, and then those two guys come up back to back. I mean, you remember Jake Diekman striking out Judge? I mean, that's like the all-time upset of 2024, maybe of the Subway Series. I mean, there's another great moment. So we saw, you know, so think about that. You're seeing a lot of things that you don't get to see maybe ever again. You know, these are the kind of hitters that only come around once in a while. You're not going to see another Judge for a long time. You're not going to see another Soto for a long time. Enjoy it. It's going to be a little stressful tonight. So get ready. You know, if you're going to work, this is an early show. Grab yourself a cup of coffee. Start to get your day going. Get the chores out of the way. And then come 7 o'clock tonight, three and a half hours of pure, intense sports. Knicks at Madison Square Garden, Subway Series out at Yankee Stadium. So hope that gave you something this morning to kind of set you up for the weekend. Okay, so what's next? Sunday morning, part two. Top 15 prospects, talking Mets style. You'll hear that. I'll give you that on a Sunday morning before the Subway Series on Sunday night. And then I'll be coming to you. I don't believe I'll be coming to you after the game. That's a little bit late. Probably early Monday morning. Stay tuned for that. So you're going to have tons of content. If you're not a subscriber to the premium content, please give it a shot. Tons of promotions and free trials. Substack.com/@TalkingMets. No G. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in on this Friday morning as we set up the Subway Series. Soto and the Subway Series. Bringing the Subway Series back to the future. All right. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Friday. Enjoy the Subway Series. Sit back. Watch some big playoff basketball at the Garden and big baseball at Yankee Stadium. Enjoy the evening. Enjoy the weekend. Till next time, take care, everybody.
Meet the Mets, head for the